And that was kind of like my wake-up call. Like, you know what? You only get one go-round in this life.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. Today, we have Cody Tyler, singer and songwriter for the band Cody Tyler and Gypsy Convoy. Cody, welcome to episode 82 of the American Grown Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to learning more about you and your band and your music.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here, and I've got a lot of cool stuff to talk about.
Perfect. That's what podcasts are for. Quick shout out to Jess from Jess Zimmerman Band. She recommended you. She was actually, for the listeners, the new listeners, back on episode 62, she was a guest. Phenomenal episode. I think she's number two for most downloads. So, you know, she's right behind John Heisey of Heisey's Diner. He's number one. So shout out to John if you're listening. But after that episode, she recommended yourself, Zach Blessing, Addie Grace, Olivia Fairball.
Yep.
Yeah, and Matt Friedman. So those were like the country artists that she's like, Austin, you should reach out to, try to get them on the podcast.
Well, I was honored to be mentioned among those because I know all of those people and they're all great people. I love all of them.
Phenomenal. Yeah. So hopefully one day I'll get them all in the chair where you're at and behind the mic and get their stories. So I want to ask you this question because you're also a history or social studies teacher. So I want to get your thoughts on what is the American spirit.
Wow, that is a wild question. I mean, I do have my degree in social studies teaching. I spent the last few years being a substitute, whether it's a building substitute, a long-term substitute, in different subjects and stuff. But my certification's in history, and I'm actually long-term subbing in history right now. The American spirit, I mean, I think it's so hard to come up with a number of things, but I would definitely say it's made up of a few aspects, one being rugged individualism. This country was founded on people who valued hard work, valued doing better for themselves and making a better life for their descendants than what they had. I think my parents embody that. My parents, I think, have better lives than what their parents had, and they've done their best to try to make sure that I was set up to have a better life than what they have. And I would say that the American spirit is being able to work hard and stick to a set of values and unapologetically, you know, be able to hold those values and move forward and create a better life for those that come after you.
100%. Do you think the American spirit is good and well?
Right now, I don't know. It's tough. It depends on who you ask, is what I would tell my students. When my students ask me a political question, I don't want to give my position. And my goal is, you know, when we get to the end of the course, they still don't know which side I'm on.
Okay.
You know, I do have a side. But right now, I think the spirit is in trouble. I see what's going on in public schools today. I see a lack of work ethic with a lot of kids now. And I do think the American spirit is in a bit of trouble. But I don't think it's gone, and I don't think it's a lost cause. I am not short on America. I'm long on America. I think it's a long game.
Yes.
And I think that we have the potential to become even better than what we are right now and even better than what we've been. The track we're on right now, I don't think is a good track, but I think we can get back on the right track.
Yeah.
It's just going to take some sacrifice and some struggle and some elbow grease, but that's nothing that we are not strangers to that.
And some good country music.
That's right.
Amen to that. So, yeah, let's dive in. You know, you mentioned your parents. What was your early childhood like? And, you know, what did your mom and dad do for a career? What were they doing?
So my early childhood was very special to me. And now that I'm approaching 30 years old, I am finding myself more often reflecting back on my childhood. And I realize how lucky I was to not grow up with smartphones around. I see the way that it affects kids now and the way that it affects people's brains now and their social skills and just their basic functioning. And my childhood was great. I grew up in Shillington, Pennsylvania, in the summertime, I would spend half the week with my grandmother, half the week with a babysitter. So I was getting social with kids that I wasn't, you know, familiar with the babysitter. But I also had time with my grandmother who lived in Moton, Pennsylvania. It was a tiny little town in Berks County. And I grew up, you know, just like any young boy in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. You know, I grew up on NASCAR. I was a big Jeff Gordon fan.
There you go. Yeah.
In the 90s and 2000s. And I grew up watching football and playing with my friends and playing with the neighbor kids until it got dark outside. And even sometimes after dark, you don't see that a lot anymore. When I see kids go down my street on bikes, I smile because I go, wow, they must have some good parents that kicked them out of the house and got them off the video games and got them away from the smartphones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Smartphones didn't become, you know, like the, I remember the first time I saw an iPhone, it was one of the rich kids at my middle school. I was in like seventh grade. It was towards the end of the school year, I guess. And I didn't get an iPhone until my sophomore year of college. I held off for so long on getting an iPhone. I'm so glad that I did. Honestly, I wish I would have held off more. But now with this business that I'm in, you know, everybody's connected to you. They're in your pocket all the time. It's almost a necessity. But I look forward to the day that I can just focus on the music and someone else can handle the business side of things and I can go back to a flip phone.
There you go. Right. Yeah, the old flip phones. The first phone I had real quick was the like Nokia, like the brick phone kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So for like the younger listeners, yeah, the screen was like maybe an inch by an inch, you know, and you had to actually press buttons and plug it in to charge it. There was no wireless charging. It was... Yeah, it was wild. And texting was like a big deal if you could text on your phone back then. But some would say like you kind of grew up in an area or you're from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
Yeah. I want to finish answering your
first question, though. Please.
So like my mom is an accountant.
Thank you. Yeah.
She's been an accountant for years, actually. She's got had the same accounting job at the same place since she graduated from college. She went to Penn State. And she's been an accountant for Boscov's since the early 80s.
Oh, wow.
And she still is, and she'll retire from there in a couple of years, hopefully. My dad started out, he was a forklift operator for Palmer, which is located around Reading.
The candy company. Chocolate. Yes. Yeah. They're a client of ours. We do some printing for them.
Oh, right.
Palmer Candies. Yeah.
Cool.
Small world.
Yeah. He was a forklift operator for them straight out of high school for years. He actually went to Votech for cabinet making. So he's pretty good as a carpenter. But he went into Palmer Candy when he was out of high school, and he did that for a number of years. And then he became a high rider operator for Glidden Paints, which was out near the Reading Airport. And then when I was in third grade, he got his CDL and became a truck driver. He wanted to do that because his whole family had done it. And he was a gooseneck truck driver. He drove for All-Star Beer Distributors. So he drove the Yuengling Lager truck around Western Berks for a number of years. And then he went to work for a company called Cardinal Logistics. And he was with them for a number of years. And a lot of that involves some over-the-road stuff. So he went over the road when I was in maybe eighth grade and was away for a lot of time. But he and my mom stuck together through it all. This October, they'll be married 40 years.
Wow. Congrats. And,
that's awesome. And then he just retired in this past winter. He got out of trucking after 20 years on the road. But yeah, so Pennsylvania, I consider that to be the area between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. You know, people, you know, sometimes refer to it in a negative light. I look at it in a positive light because when people see Pennsylvania, they think of Amish. You know, down in Lancaster County, or they think of cheesesteaks and football and, you know, the birthplace of our country in Philadelphia. Excuse me. Or they think of, they'll think of Permane Brothers sandwiches and the Steelers and steel mills out in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But Pennsylvania's different. It's scenic. It's beautiful. There's so much to it. And it often gets overlooked. It's like the flyover, like the United States has flyover country, and people sometimes look at Pennsylvania as, you know, fly through country or just, you know, turnpike country. But you get off of the turnpike and there's so much beautiful scenery and there's so much to see and so much to do. And I'm proud to be from that area.
Oh, there's a lot of small towns. You know what I mean? Small town USA.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know it because they just travel right through, like you said, fly right over it. So I just thought that was interesting when you said Pennsylvania on the forum. I was like, I like that. I got to figure out what that means to you. So very cool. So now, growing up, when did music start becoming a part of your life?
Well, I got my first guitar when I was in fourth grade. I was 10 years old. My parents got it for me for my birthday, and they got me lessons at Fred's Music Shop in Berks County. And I was taught by who is considered to be one of the best guitar players in Berks County. His name was Gary Wenzel. I took lessons with him for maybe 2 or 3 years, and it got to a point where I was just taking songs for him, you know, with a CD, saying, hey, can you tab this out for me? He'd write it out, and then I'd go home, and I'd learn it, and I'd get it down pretty well. And I went to my parents, and I said, you know, guys, like, you don't have to keep spending this money on me every month. I think I got it. And what I don't got, the internet has kind of become a thing now. You know, like 2004 was when I turned 10. So this year I'm coming up on 20 years playing guitar.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so around 2006, 2007, that's when YouTube's popular, that, you know, you can, and all, they have guitar tab websites too. So I could just look stuff up and learn how to play things. So that was kind of how my guitar thing started. And then when I was in high school and I got my driver's license, had a pickup truck, I had a girlfriend who lived about 15 minutes away from me. So I would turn on the radio a lot, and she lived out in the country. I was kind of in the suburbs of Reading, like right on the edge of the suburbs and the country. And when I would drive out to her, you know, they listened to country music a lot. And I had always had it in my life, but I started listening to the radio a lot more, country radio, and singing along with it at the top of my lungs, flying out those back roads, those scenic back roads of Pennsylvania.
Cornfields, deer, cows, all that good stuff. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Flying out there, flying back, and I'd be singing at the top of my lungs, and I noticed, like, this feels good, this singing thing.
Yeah.
And eventually I started learning those songs I heard on the radio and playing them on guitar and singing at the same time, which at first it was the hardest thing to do, trying to do two things at once like that. But after a while, it started to feel natural, and I'd learn song after song after song where I'd be playing and singing and go, wow, this just feels good.
Felt right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, you know, back then when you're learning guitar, you're singing your lungs out, you know, on your way to your girlfriend's house, who would you say are some of the musicians or artists that have influenced your style of music?
Yeah, so I started out when I was a little kid. My dad had a pickup truck. It was this old white 1968 Chevy pickup that he picked up for just a couple hundred bucks from some guy that had it in a wanted ad. And it just had a cassette player in it. But
a cassette player. Oh, yeah. That's going back a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah.
Like early 2000s. So this was like the age of CDs. And, you know, if you had a CD player in your car, at least to me, it was like, oh, that's kind of that's a ritzy, that's fancy.
Yeah, that's high end, yeah, yeah.
So we would get CDs at, like, say, Best Buy and burn them to cassette tapes so we could play them in the truck. And the two country albums my dad had in the truck were Kenny Chesney's Greatest Hits.
Okay.
That was when She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy kind of became popular. I'm almost ashamed to admit that because that's a little more pop country than I'd be willing to get now. But we liked it. And it was still some old school Kenny on that album too, and Hank Williams Jr.'s Greatest Hits. That was like the one for us, and we would play that, and, you know, when we'd be running errands or something, he would always take my brother and I with, and we would play that cassette all the time. So fast forward years later, I'm in my teen years, I'm into rock and roll, I'm into Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, all that stuff, and I started digging the blues that Led Zeppelin was playing. I worked my way back to like the early 20s listening to Robert Johnson. And then I started coming forward again, Howlin' Wolf, Lightnin' Hopkins, Elmore James. Then I found the Allman Brothers. And the day we're recording this, of course, Dickie Betts just passed away today, one of the guitar players for the Allman Brothers. They set my world on fire. My parents always liked them, but I was always kind of, you know, oh, my parents like it. Like, but then when I turned 16 or 17 and I'm finding the Allman Brothers, I'm like, okay, this, I see what they were getting at.
Yeah.
And I'm from what they call the Echo Generation, which is kids born from like the mid 80s to the late 90s that listen to their parents' music and really revere it. And I'm starting to see a resurgence in that again, where a lot of kids now like the music that their parents liked. And now it's more like 90s and 2000s stuff. But I was into a lot of 60s and 70s rock and Southern rock. And that Southern rock morphed into today's country then, too. So that's kind of how the country thing came full circle again. And then I came back to those old Hank records that my dad would listen to riding around in his truck. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the evolution. And what really brought me back to the The old style country was finding my grandfather's vinyl records.
Wow.
In the attic of my grandmother's house.
Okay.
I was looking for my mom's stuff, and I just stumbled on his.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's always been different genres of music around, but that's the journey that I kind of see happen, that unfolded as
yeah,
you know, I was going through my formative years.
Right. I mean, sounds like a very rich history of country music, music in general. You know, there's so much to cover here. So, not to fast forward, but like after high school, college life, like did you go to college? What were your thoughts? Did you get right into the workforce? And then like 2017, because that's when it sounds like things really started kicking off for you. But there's some time in between. What was that like for you?
So I went to Millersville University for 4 years. I got my teaching degree there in social studies. And I was listening to a lot of the old country, and I was growing disillusioned more and more with what I was hearing on the radio, because a lot of it was pop stuff and a lot of the clap and snap tracks and stuff. And I was starting to turn away from some of that. Now, I did like some of it for a while there, but once you get around like 2014, 2015, I started turning more towards the old outlaw stuff, the 70s stuff, Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, more of the Hank Jr. stuff, Merle Haggard too. My social studies teacher in high school put me on to Merle Haggard, actually. And then I started hearing new stuff that sounded like the old stuff. Chris Stapleton with yeah. Traveler.
Okay.
I remember the first time I heard Tennessee Whiskey. I was in my dorm room. There was, it wasn't Apple Music yet. It was iTunes Radio.
Oh, wow.
So it was just like a shuffle of stations.
Yeah.
You would punch in an artist and you could listen to that stuff and you'd find new things. So from Chris Stapleton with Traveler, I went down the rabbit hole. I found Cody Jinks. I found Sturgill Simpson.
Okay.
I found Whitey Morgan in the 78s and guys like that. And then the girlfriend that I had from the country, from, you know, back in high school, we broke up in the year between my junior and senior year of college, and I started going to concerts. And I went to a Cody Jinks and Whitey Morgan show, and it just totally lit a fire in me. And I thought, man, you know, I would love to do what they're doing for a living, because they're not on the radio, but yet they're on the road, they're playing shows, they're making a living, and they're starting to take off. And the first time I saw that show, it was Cody Jinks opening for Whitey Morgan.
Okay.
Nobody had really known who Cody Jinks was yet. He pulled up to this little basement venue in Philadelphia in a white Dodge pickup truck with Texas plates on it. And Whitey was pulling a trailer on the back that said Live Snakes. I think that was to keep thieves out of his
good gear
trailer.
Yeah.
But that show, and then a couple months later, I saw Sturgill Simpson live on his Sailor's Guide to Earth tour, front row at the Fillmore in Philly. And yeah, those concerts that I was seeing when I was still single, and that really just kind of lit this fire in me. And then when I met my wife, it was halfway through my senior year of college. She's the one that encouraged me. And I was saying, you know, man, this student teaching is, you know, teaching is what I thought I wanted to do for the rest of my life. But man, this is draining me, because I'm paying for these credits to go and student teach. And I'm trying to come and see you. So she had gone to Kutztown University, which is about an hour from Millersville. But we grew up in the same town. We graduated from the same high school. We were actually in the same party of people that went to prom together.
Oh, wow.
There's a picture of us, actually, where we're standing. You know, she's behind me, and I'm with my date. She's with hers.
Yeah.
So she brought that out at the
wedding.
What
a small world.
We thought that was funny.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I was traveling every weekend to go and see her, and I was like, I'm putting gas in my truck to do that, and I'm putting gas in my truck to drive back and forth between my dorm and where I'm student teaching at. And she goes, well, you play guitar and you sing. Why don't you try to get some gigs and make a little money just to put gas in your tank?
That's a good idea, yeah.
And now here we are.
Here we are. Holy cow. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And we're going to get into it here. So, a small world, I was at Kutztown my freshman year. Real nice campus.
Oh, cool,
so,
cool.
But that's awesome that your now wife is supportive, you know, and even back then was like, yeah, why don't you get some gigs and make a go of it. So to kind of like pick up from there, and you could fill in anything that I might miss, but so 2017, you were a top 150 vocalist for season 14 of NBC's The Voice.
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. So,
because I imagine hundreds, if not maybe thousands of people apply.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that do apply. The process back then was a little different than it is now. But yeah, so I graduated from Millersville in 17. That winter of 2016 was when my wife and I first got together. And she convinced me, you know, by like December of 16, I got my first show. And then I started getting my first paying shows in early 2017. And that's kind of when things took off. And I thought, you know, this is a cool part-time thing to do on weekends. You know, I'll go get a teaching job in the fall. And then this will be, you know, sort of the thing that I do on the weekends just for a little extra money. But then Greg Allman died. And as I said before, the Allman Brothers, they still, to this day, are my A1 favorite ever. And that was kind of like my wake-up call. Like, you know what? You only get one go-round in this life. Greg lived this crazy life. And so did everybody around him. You know, let's do something different. So that's when I decided, you know, let's see if we can make a go at making music a full-time career. So my wife and her mom both are very supportive, and her father too, and my parents are too. But my wife and her mother especially pushed me for the reality shows. They're like, go try for The Voice.
Did they? Yeah, because they want to see you on TV. And what's your wife's first name real quick?
So my wife's name's Sammy.
Sammy. Shout out to Sammy. That's awesome. Because, I mean, and you got to have supportive people behind you. You know what I mean? So for her to be like, let's go, Cody, you know, get after it. Let's do this. So what was that experience like?
It was a wild experience. So they convinced me to try out for it. So the way they used to do it was in person. So we had the open call auditions. They were coming to Philly. So we went down to Philly one day. It was in the summer. So it was the summer between my senior year graduating and when I started subbing for the first year. And we went down to Philly for the open calls. That's when anybody can show up that wants to. They put us in a room, about 10 people to a room. And they gave each of you maybe 30 seconds to sing. And they had maybe one or two judges in the room. And 10 of us got up. We sang. And they said, all right. And they read out like 8 names. They said, thank you. We appreciate you trying out. But you can exit over here. And then they read the other names. And mine was one of like the 2 or 3 that they read. And they said, we want you to stay. And they said, sing something else for us. I guess just to make sure you weren't a one-trick pony.
Okay, you know? Gotcha.
Because everybody has that karaoke song.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the one that they know by heart, and that's like all they got. Gotcha. Yeah.
So I sang
What song did you sing?
I don't even remember the first song that I sang, but the second one I know was Fast Hand by Cody Jinks.
Okay.
And they said, all right. I think it was all 3 of us. They handed us like this paper, and they said, we want you to come back tomorrow. Come to this address. And the address was at a studio somewhere in Philly. It was like a recording studio. So I went back to my wife. I was like, hey, I got through. This is cool. Oh, my God. So we're like, okay. So we drove home. I'm about an hour and 15 minutes from Philly, depending on the traffic. So we drive home, drove back down the next day, went to this studio. I had my guitar with me. And they had me do like 1 or 2 songs to a backing track. And if I wanted to play on one, they said, yeah, that's fine, too. So they filmed us doing that in person. And then they sent that film off to L.A. to the executive producers. And they said, you know, if we want you, we'll give you a call back. So I got called to the executive producer callbacks in Los Angeles. They paid for my plane ticket. They paid for my check.
Oh, wow.
You know, they paid to check the guitar and everything. We flew to L.A. And then they took us to a hotel. We were kind of sequestered for the whole weekend. I'm probably not even supposed to say this, but I don't intend on going for The Voice again.
Gotcha.
So it is what it is. They sequestered us in a hotel for the whole weekend, which was new to me because this is all pre-COVID. This is 2017.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So the only way we could leave as musicians, they didn't want a bunch of musicians running around Burbank, California, because, you know, people know what you look like. They see a gang in you. They can figure you're probably on some kind of a show. So they said, you're in the top 150. The top 75 get considered for the blind auditions.
Okay.
So then at some point in the weekend, they loaded us in a van, took us across town to some undisclosed location, and they had us in this room that was real dark with all these vibey candles around. And there were people. You didn't see who they were, but there were these people just kind of sitting in the dark. I guess they were the executive producers of the show. And I performed 2 songs. And then they said, all right, thank you. And they also did some interviews with us, too, like for personality and stuff. And yeah, then they put us all in separate rooms. They put us in 4 rooms. And, you know, they had you all grouped together. And they would take turns coming into each room and saying, hey, you know, you've made it or you haven't made it. So they came into my room and they said, you know, thank you for participating, but we've chosen to go on with another group of people. We've got your plane tickets ready if there's any changes, whatever. So then they sent me home on a plane from there. And then it was just, you know, back to normal.
Yeah.
So I tried for it again one time. I went up to Boston and I got to the callback where they just film you in a studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to that point up there. And then I did try for it again post-COVID. The first two rounds are all filmed. Like, you just video it yourself and send it in now.
That's not they the same.
Yeah, they don't do anything in person anymore until you get to, like, say, the executive callbacks when they bring you to L.A.
Gotcha. So going from, you know, Pennsylvania to L.A. or Boston, what was that like? And what did you learn from that experience?
So that was my only time in L.A., and I didn't get to learn a whole lot because I was in a hotel the whole weekend. I wanted to go get some In-N-Out. I've never been to an In-N-Out. But I kind of missed the boat on that. I think I slept through that. But they had certain times of the day when you could go with a chaperone to take a group of you to get something to eat outside of the hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
They were super secretive about it, too. Like, we weren't even allowed to talk to hotel staff about what we were there for. But I think that when you get to that point, when you're at the top 150 or whatever, they're mainly looking, it's not necessarily for talent, because everybody that's there can sing.
Yeah.
And they're so good. And I think what they're mainly looking for is a good backstory. Do you make good TV?
Okay, right.
Can you, you know, do you have a story that's going to make the audience watching at home cry? And is there a way that the network can look like the hero and swoop in and be the hero in the end?
Yeah, you know? pulls on the viewers' heartstrings, right? You know what I mean? Really gets them emotionally involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had something going there. They kept it that secret. I mean, I guess that makes sense.
They gave us papers that had details of everything, but nothing said the voice on it. It said Music Summer Camp.
Really? Is that what it said? Music Summer Camp?
If anybody asked us what we were there for, we're like, yeah, it's like this Music Summer Camp thing here. And I think I still have the paper at home, too.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. The little, I don't know why they're so secret about it, but I mean, yeah. I guess they have their reasons. I guess things have happened in the past. I've done American Idol. They weren't as crazy secretive about anything. And I tried to do America's Got Talent. Nothing was wild about that either. Yeah, and the Boston time was cool more just because I got to see that city. And that's honestly one of my favorite American cities. There's a lot of cool stuff
there. Yeah, I've never been there or to L.A. That's why I was asking. You know, I'm just a Pennsylvania guy, kind of like yourself. You know what I mean? Yeah. Stuck between Philly and Pittsburgh. So, you know, after going for The Voice in 2019, I think was another kind of big year for you. You finished as the runner-up in the Tumbleweed Country Music Festival Rising Star Talent Search, which featured over 300 country music artists from the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
So I've never even heard. What is the Tumbleweed Country Music Festival?
So Tumbleweed used to be a really, really cool festival for like independent and red dirt style country artists. Guys like Tyler Childers, Blackberry Smoke, Whiskey Myers, the Steelwoods, Alabama have all headlined it over the years. It was one of those festivals that started out just south of Kansas City, but it was on the Kansas side. It was in Lacine, Kansas. And that was like the it festival that everybody wanted to go and play. And they had this little contest every year where, you know, if you got chosen by the fans, you would get to play, you know, an early set on like the first day of the festival. And I sort of saw this as like, wow, like this is playing right to our target market.
Yeah.
The music community for that type of music was and still is kind of small. And I thought, man, if I could get up on that stage in front of all those different people, like that would really be like the kickstart that my career needs before we get an album going. So we entered that competition and there wasn't really anything to it more than just votes and stuff. And we were in the final like five or something, and it came down to like the last night of voting. We were in the lead, and then some band squeaked right ahead of us at the last minute.
Yeah,
which was fine, you know. And they were really good. I think Folk Soul Revival was their name.
Okay.
But yeah, they squeaked in there, and then they ended up not even playing the festival, which was the worst thing.
What?
Yeah.
Really? What happened?
So they were apparently not aware that the festival slot didn't pay anything. And this is where it kind of gets a little hairy. Like, musicians have to get paid.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you're doing a contest, you shouldn't probably expect to get paid. So they bowed out, and then the festival never called anybody else to fill that slot.
Really?
They should have called me. And
yeah, why wouldn't they?
I had some friends that were on the festival that were like, dude, you got screwed. Like, that's
it sounds like it.
Yeah. It is what it is, though. I still had a great time. I still went to the festival. I bought a ticket.
Nice.
And went. My wife and I both went. I did a little mini tour that year. It was like a month-long tour. We played everywhere between here and we got all the way out to Utah where we played.
Holy cow.
Then we took a little bit of time and did some of the national parks thing because my wife's a photographer and we went out to did the Grand Canyon, did Las Vegas. I wouldn't trade the experience for the world. It was great to just be at Tumbleweed and I got to meet a lot of my friends that are from that I made on Facebook through a lot of different fan groups and stuff. And yeah, it was just a great experience. And I still got some shows in Missouri out of that whole deal anyway. But yeah, Tumbleweed was still fun that year.
So it still got exposure. You know what I mean? Still got exposure and everything.
Absolutely.
Now, the term you used, I've never heard of it. So I want to learn more about it. Red Dirt Country.
Yeah.
What is Red Dirt Country?
So that's a loaded question. It depends on who you ask. But a lot of people would tell you that it started in Oklahoma back around the 1990s with bands like Cross Canadian Ragweed, Jason Boland and the Stragglers, and a couple others as well. Now, I didn't really come into that scene until, you know, like the mid-2010s. So my memory and what I've been told by the older folks in that that scene is a little hazy. But some of the modern-day bands that are considered part of that are like Turnpike Troubadours. And then you get some more Texas guys like Cody Jinx. And then some people, they would want to include Tyler Childers in there, but he's from Kentucky. So he's more like that Appalachian side of things. So Red Dirt, it's tough to say who you can and can't include. But the way I would put it is anything that's sort of classified as like the good country music that's not necessarily on the radio or the pop country part of radio.
Yeah.
That's what I consider to be like Red Dirt. And there's still guys today that are carrying that banner. Guys like Charles Wesley Godwin, Wyatt Flores, Taylor Honeycutt, Red Clay Strays. Those are sort of the up-and-comers right now. And you've got guys that are out there and are totally established and are selling arenas like Whiskey Myers and Cody Jinx. Whiskey Myers, though, they like to call themselves a rock and roll band. They started out country, but really they're like a southern rock band to me. And there's other southern rock groups that kind of fit into that Red Dirt mold. They all just make good music. It's a lot of blends of like bluegrass, country, rock and roll.
So, you know, how did the band Cody Tyler and Gypsy Convoy, you know, how did it start? And how did you come up with the name?
So, the way it started was I had a good friend of mine who our parents were friends, and we would hang out growing up, and he was a drummer, and I was a guitar player, and we would play together on weekends, and we'd play at, you know, family barbecues and stuff, and we were bad. You know, we were like 10, 11, 12 okay. years old, just banging away on our instruments.
Having fun, yeah.
Just having fun.
That's what it's about, yeah.
We would do AC/DC covers. I wouldn't even sing. It would just be my guitar and his drums. It was like a really bad version of the Black Keys. But he had, it was his dad's cousin's husband who played guitar and was in bands all the time, like cover bands. He brought me into his band when he found out what I was doing and was hearing me sing. He's like, this guy just needs a good band. So I joined his band. It was a cover band. We did a lot of southern rock music. It was called Double Crossed. And the bass player from that band, he and I wound up forming this solo band to do original music and get away from the cover stuff. So the bass player's name's Kenny. And then Kenny went out and found a drummer whose name is Ken. So he's from up around like Pottsville. Kenny's from Sinking Spring, which isn't too far away from where I'm at. And then eventually we added our keyboard player, Lenny, to the mix. And we did have a harmonica player there for a while, Murray, who was in the cover band, Double Crossed. So, yeah, that's kind of how that formed. We were a five-piece at one point, but now we're a four-piece. So it's keyboards, drums, bass guitar, and then me singing and playing guitar. And the way I came up with the name was my last name is Yaus. But nobody knows how to say it because of the spelling. It's Y-O-U-S-E, and everybody always mispronounces it. It's not that I'm not proud of the name, but I dropped it, and Tyler's my middle name. I thought, you know, Cody, Tyler, that's fine. But at the time, you know, there were a lot of guys that they were just going by, you know, like a name and then a band name, you know, to sort of separate the two, because the band kind of deserves a name all its own. And especially the guys that are in my band, they're so good. They're all older than me. The youngest guy next to me is in his early 50s, you know, so they've been around. They're seasoned. They know what they're doing. There's no, you know, nobody's getting in the way. You know, like sometimes when you have younger guys, girlfriends can get in the way, wives can get in the way.
Yeah.
By now, you know, they and their partners, like they have it figured out. Like everybody, there's not any drama with that. Everybody's set. It's great.
Which shout out to Kenny, Ken, and Lenny.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. I love it. Yeah. Shout out to those guys. If you guys are listening, that's awesome. So, yeah. So, okay. So, Cody, Tyler, middle name, but Gypsy Convoy. Where did that come from?
So my dad's a truck driver. He comes from a long line of truck drivers and Convoy, you know, like the movie with Kris Kristofferson.
Yeah.
And the C.W. McCall song. So I wanted Convoy somewhere in the name. And then I thought, well, Cody Tyler and Convoy, that's a little weird. Got to add something else. And I thought, well, I'm a Jimi Hendrix fan. And I love Willie Nelson. Willie Nelson sang about a band of gypsies going down the highway. And Jimi Hendrix had his band was the Band of Gypsies.
Yeah.
So I thought, Gypsy, Convoy, bam, there it is.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to figure that out all day. I'm like, because I was listening out in the road. I was down in York County. And I'm like, Cody Tyler and Gypsy Convoy. I was like, what's the backstory to Gypsy Convoy? So, all right. Thank you for sharing that. No, I appreciate it. Yeah. So you got your band. You got your guys. At some point, you released your debut album. Tell us a little bit about that experience, recording it, and then releasing it.
So we took way too long to record that album, but I think the results showed. I think it came out pretty good. We started recording that in February of 2020.
Really?
Yeah.
2020, February. Yeah.
So
COVID year.
We went down to York to Think Loud Studios, which was owned by the band Live. So it's like a state-of-the-art studio. We got in there. We were working with Jeff McKinnon was our recording engineer, and he did a little bit of production work on the album too. And we got in there, recorded for a day with him, and then a couple weeks later, the world changed.
Yeah.
So we kind of sat on it for a few months, and we went... there were some complications with that studio, so we had to change up a little bit, but we kept our engineer. We kept Jeff, and we were going... Jeff had a studio in his house, in his basement, and we recorded horn parts for one of the songs there, and then Jeff ended up moving, so then we were waiting again until his studio at his new place was, like, built, and then we recorded pretty much the rest of everything there. We did some other tracks at a studio called Full Tilt that could handle having the drums because we live mic'd all the drums and stuff. So yeah, all together, we started in 2020. We finished up in early 2022 or late 2021. I got married in July of 2021. So that, with a wedding got thrown in there.
Yeah, you had a lot going on.
Yeah. I ran for the school board in my local district in 2021 as well. So that kind of took away from some things too. But once we got into 2022, everything was finished up, put a little bow on it, and sent it off. Got it mastered by Pete Lyman down in Nashville. He's mastered stuff for people. He's done every Chris Stapleton album. He's done a lot of Tyler Childers albums, Sturgill Simpson, a lot of people. So it was an honor to have him on our stuff. And in May, it was Friday, May 13th, 2022.
Okay.
We put the record out. And last year at the Central PA Music Awards, shout out to Central PA Music Hall of Fame and awards. They do it every year. They've been doing it since 2020, actually, was their first awards show, I think. They awarded us last year with Album of the Year for that record. And also, we got Best Country Band. So we got two awards last year at the CPMAs. Nice.
Oh, that's phenomenal. And the album title is Stare Your Demons Down.
Yes.
Yeah. And like I mentioned, I was listening to that album on Spotify, and a couple of the songs that were my favorite was Still That Never Gets Dry. And that, to me, what I take, and you can give your take, because obviously, you know, you wrote it, almost like a love song, right? Like your love for your wife or your significant other is never going to run dry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then Playing With Fire, Water, that one I'm a little hazy on, but I know I really liked it. And then, of course, Eagle Tattoo, which we can definitely get more into because that one definitely has some serious meaning behind it. But yeah, do you want to give like a rundown of those three songs?
Yeah, so Still It Never Goes Dry, I actually wrote on the plane ride home from The Voice.
Really?
When they sent me home.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It got started there anyway, and I missed my wife terribly. I mean, she was my girlfriend at the time, but that was the longest time we'd spent away from each other, besides being in college. I just remember that last semester of college and student teaching that all I wanted was to be done so that I could come home and not have to worry about going without her, because I knew I wanted to marry her from very early on. I wanted to propose to her that summer, but everybody told me, like, it's only been like 8 or 9 months, you know, maybe hold off. I'm like, but I know,
you know. Well, you know, yeah.
So I held off on proposing to her until the summer of 2018. But Yeah, I had been away from her for a whole weekend, sequestered in a hotel. I kind of started the words in the hotel, but the bulk of the song really hit me on the plane ride. And it was the plane, they flew us from LA, and then I had a connecting flight in Atlanta, and then was coming home to Philly. So that's why, you know, there's the references to Atlanta, and now I'm over Mississippi.
Yes.
And stuff, you're probably on the ground. That's where those lines come from, is me being on that plane on the way home. And that's why, you know, I'm sort of cussing LA in the song too, you know, saying, who the hell needs LA?
Yeah.
Like, it colder anyway.
I was hoping that, like, because sometimes, you know, musicians, they don't write their own stuff. But, like, the fact that you have a real story behind this, you could tell, you know what I mean? When I'm listening to it, I could tell, like, okay, this has to be something that happened in his real life. So, okay, keep going. Yeah.
I don't do anything without intention. Everything that gets named, every line, there's a reason.
A meaning behind
it. And there's a story. Like, we could talk all day.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much that song in a nutshell. It's just me missing my wife. Basically.
Yeah. Okay. I could tell. I was like, that's exactly what it is. It's like a love story. You're missing your significant other, your wife. Now, Playing with Fire, Water, that one I'm a little hazy on. Refresh my memory of what that was. I know I liked it.
So that's a drinking song.
That's why I liked it.
So years ago, my parents have inherited some land up in Potter County. It's about 20 acres of land. And when I was in college, my friends and I, we would go up there sometimes and have campouts. You know, there's no cabin or anything on it yet. It's just land. It's up in Germania, PA, like southeastern Potter County, not far from the Grand Canyon of PA. So one year I went up there. It was around the time I turned 21, and I had this jar of Old Smoky moonshine. You're familiar with Old Smoky?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yep.
They had a brand partnership, I guess, with Harley Davidson. So I had this Harley shine. It was called charred moonshine. So it wasn't clear. It was like this brownish color. It was like 103 proof. And it was just this really strong stuff. Would really put hair on your chest. Yeah. Not like I need help with that, but
I could tell from the beard. Yeah, you probably don't.
Yeah. So I'm hitting this shine. We were at so it was Labor Day weekend, and in Germania, every year over Labor Day weekend, they have what they call Germania Old Home Day or Germania Days. So the whole town just kind of gets together in this park. The fire company puts some things on. They do like gun raffles, and there's a pig chase, and there's a band that plays for like 8 hours. It's nuts. And people really just kind of are in the parking lot, and they party, and they drink, and then they go to the festival. They get a little food. There's some barbecue and things like that. And this festival that I'd gone to with my buddy when I was a kid just so happened to be like a mile or two from where this camp is that we found out later that we inherited from an aunt and uncle of my dad's who never had any kids. My parents kind of took care of them when they were getting older, and they saw it fit to leave the land to us and keep it in the family.
Yeah.
So I'm hitting this jar of shine, and then we're like, let's go back to the land, and we'll start a fire. And, you know, this party's dying down anyway. Let's go back. And on the drive back, you know, I'm like, I probably shouldn't be driving right now, but it's just dirt roads. And
right.
We made it okay, but I thought to myself, man, that was kind of wild. Like, you know, not condoning drunk driving or buzz driving.
No, definitely not. No.
I mean, this was just cruising on some back roads, maybe doing 5 mph. It was real rocky, but, you know, I got back. I thought, man, wouldn't that suck if I wrecked my truck out here?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what inspired that song. I wrote it like years after the fact, like maybe 2 or 3 years after that happened. But I always kind of had this working title for a song in my head called Playing with Firewater. So I decided to write, you know, what if things had gone south? So really the song is like a warning and sort of almost like Skynyrd with That Smell, you know, warning against, you know, doing something that's risky or going to be bad for, you know, your health or your life in the long run.
Yeah. Well, fire, water, you know, first I'm like, okay, that's moonshine. I knew that. And then I'm like, ooh, fire, water is kind of like playing with fire. Like I figured, and the more I listened to it, I'm like, yeah, it's something that's a warning. You know what I mean? Like you said, it's something you don't want to mess with, you know? Now, before we get into Eagle Tattoo, for Stare Your Demons Down, what was some of the inspiration? Where did you gather, you know, like, was there some muse that you turned to? You know, how did you come up with the album, and what was your creativity process?
So the title of the album, Stare Your Demons Down, comes from the song One to the Heart. It's a line from in the song. And I thought that that line sort of encompassed the theme of all the songs on the album, because on each song, you're sort of dealing with a conflict or like an inner demon in some way. And it's just, the whole album is kind of dedicated to people that, you know, stare their demons down head on. And that's kind of why I wanted to release it on Friday the 13th, which is what I did. So.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, yeah. You know, bad luck or bad juju be damned. You know, we're going to go forward with this. And yeah. We're not going to worry about things like that. And this was just kind of like, that's the here we are. You know, it's the debut album, you know, so you right. got to make a statement. So that's kind of the statement with that. And the artwork was my idea that I communicated to the artist. His name is Zach Nelson. He was based down in Austin, Texas. And I told him what I wanted. And I told him I wanted, you know, like a Pennsylvania Railroad, you know, like a locomotive on the front. And I wanted a truck, you know, that was stuck on the tracks. And, you know, the guy, it's Stare Your Demons Down, you know.
Yeah.
It's a man in a truck versus a freight train, you know, carrying coal. And there's a song on there about a train and a train engineer and carrying coal and stuff like that. And where I'm from, Reading has a very rich railroad history. So the cover can almost, it can encompass multiple songs that are on the record. And there's a band that I follow called the Steel Woods, where they're very good at this. Their album artwork encompasses, you know, multiple songs or all of the songs that are on their albums. So that's kind of where I drew that inspiration from. But I'm not a very good artist as far as like drawing things goes. That's more my wife's forte. But yeah, this Zach Nelson, he had done albums for other guys that I really look up to and posters for people that I really admire. So I wanted him to do this and just sort of bring this concept in my head to life. So yeah, that's kind of where that came from.
I tell you, it's amazing. Like it's almost like you thought of everything and everything kind of intertwines itself in this album, you know?
My head is just a load of spider webs.
I love it though. It's great. It all comes together. So now Eagle Tattoo has a special meaning to you. I wanted to ask too, do you actually have an eagle tattoo?
Yeah, I'll show you right now.
No way, you do. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I was wondering this the whole car ride. Yeah. I was like, I wonder if he has one.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to.
Oh yeah, you definitely don't need help with the hair.
Yeah.
Is it on the back?
No, it's on my arm.
Oh, on your arm?
Yeah, it's on my arm here. I've never done this for an interview before, so this.
Oh, all right. As long as you don't mind.
Yeah.
Can I get? We'll get a picture in front of the flag then.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, just your, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. You can get it there, but yeah, there's the eagle, and then there's two dog tags.
Yeah, at the bottom.
So the dog tags aren't accurate. It's initials. So that one there. Which one's that? That's my grandfather. That's a Palmer Ellis Brace. He was a lieutenant colonel, Army National Guard. He passed away of a heart attack that he suffered up at Fort Drummond, New York.
Okay.
So he was a National Guard. He'd go to Fort Indiantown Gap all the time. But one summer he went to Fort Drum. He was in his early 50s, suffered a heart attack. Nobody really saw it coming. But yeah, he was on duty when he passed. And it was about... Actually, today's his birthday, April 18th. He would have been 93 today.
Yeah.
But yeah, he passed away in his early 50s. And then the other one is my great uncle. So that grandfather is my maternal grandfather. So his wife, my grandmother, her brother was from Schuylkillhaven, and he was in World War II, 82nd Airborne.
Oh, wow.
Dropped in on D-Day and was killed on June 7th, 44. So if you know your history, he was fighting, you know, for a day there. So if you've ever seen Band of Brothers, those guys are the 101st Airborne, but he was in the 82nd. But what those guys went through, you know, those first 24 hours of that series that you watch is probably what his life
was like,
the last 24 hours of his life.
Wow.
He was, I think, 19 when he was killed. But yeah, he was a Schuylkillhaven High School grad, played football for the Hurricanes and all that. But yeah, so that song is really about, it's about that tattoo, but it's also about my little brother too.
Yeah, you did reference, you know, your younger brother and how proud you are and everything. So yeah, can you talk more on that?
I wrote that song as sort of a letter for my little brother when he was in basic training for the Army. Fall of 2017. So he graduated from Governor Mifflin High School, as did I, but he graduated in 2017. And then in the fall, he shipped out to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And I sort of had this idea for a song, you know, because I'd had this tattoo for 3 years at that point. And I thought, man, I hope nothing bad happens to him. But if anything does, you know, I'm going to have to add that tag on my arm because it's my grandfather, my great uncle. Like, my brother is closer to me than those. I mean, I never even knew those two guys.
Yeah.
So if something would happen to my brother, I would have to find a way to incorporate that into the tattoo. I thought, shoot, that would be a song. So I wrote it as a letter, hoping that it would never have to happen. And thankfully, it never had to happen. As you saw, there's still two there.
There's only two, right? Yeah. Okay, good.
So it's a good thing. But yeah, he retired from the Army. He was an Apache helicopter mechanic. And he did his basic training, Fort Jackson. And then he was stationed for his whole career for 6 years out in Fort Lewis McChord out near Seattle, Washington. So he was out there. He did two stints in Korea where he flew over, and he was on the bases over there working on choppers. He enjoyed himself for the most part the first time he went over pre-COVID, and he hated it when he went over post-COVID because there were a lot of restrictions. And he said the amount of pollution that comes over from China and like blacks out the sky, he said, is ridiculous.
Is that bad? Yeah.
He said you almost have to go outside with a mask. He said there's just not much quality of life there. He said Seoul was a lot of fun getting to go to that town. But he said after COVID, he said the Koreans, they hated Americans because they assumed we were all dirty and had COVID. So he wasn't happy his second time over there, but he was finally glad to get out. He was sick of living on the West Coast, so close to Seattle. But yeah, he and his wife, they moved back here and they bought a house, and they are maybe a mile and a half down the road from my wife and I.
Oh, nice.
And my parents are right between us. And then my wife's parents are like up the hill. So we're all in like this 2.5 mile wide circle.
Yeah.
In Shillington, that's Pennsylvania. That's
perfect. It's like a happy ending there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because
listening to the song, it's like, you know, his younger brother, is he okay? Like, I had to know. So, and I'm so glad that you really have that tattoo. Because I'm like, if he doesn't, it's still a great song. But if he has it, man, it just makes it so much better. Wow. Yeah. So
the tattoo's real.
Yeah, the tattoo's real. Wow. And yeah, definitely. If you don't mind, we'll get like a just shot of that arm in front of the American flag with the eagle on. But
yeah.
So we covered like my favorite songs. Let's take a sip break real quick. Yeah. So what do you see as the future for Cody Tyler and Gypsy Convoy?
So we want to make more records. That's the name of the game. It's tough being, you know, a full-time musician and a full-time teacher as well, especially in this economy and stuff. But it's about having the time for the studio and also the money set aside for the studio, because making an album is not cheap these days, that's for sure. We've got like an album's worth of songs that we're ready to get in and record, but I'm also in the middle of a solo album right now too, for just doing like acoustic stuff with a little bit of instrumental accompaniment. So that'll be a solo, just Cody Tyler album. It was going to be an EP, but then I added two songs to it, so now it's seven songs. So it'll it'll be a little album. My goal is to have that out for the fall, and I'd like to get in the studio this summer with Gypsy Convoy and make our next album, too.
Okay. You're busy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. So now, what would you say is your passion in life?
Music, without question.
If you didn't say that, I'd be like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's got to be music. Okay.
Yeah, it's making music.
Yeah. Are there any mentors in your life that you wanted to shout out or mention?
Well, for starters, my wife, she's the one that pushes me every day to be better and be the absolute best version of myself. She's my spiritual guide. Yeah, always has been. She's in tune with that kind of stuff way more than I am. If I could be more like her, I think I'd be a lot further along. But yeah, it's good to have her in my life. Next to that, my parents and my in-laws, they are my biggest cheerleaders as well. It's good to have that. And, you know, her parents are still married after over 30 years. My parents are still married after almost 40 years. And just growing up with a tight-knit nuclear family, both of us, and now us wanting to eventually start a family someday, that is just so huge. And we all have ambitions, and we all root for each other, and we're all very goal-driven. So those mentors, definitely. My band, too. Those guys are mentors to me. They're, you know, as I said, they're older than I am. They've been around the block a time or two, and they have great suggestions when we're writing songs about how to change things up and make things flow right. Yeah, I'd say my wife, my parents, her parents, and the band.
Perfect. The items you brought with, what do we got here? Yeah, you have a pendant on.
Yeah.
Your guitar and some kind of glass bottle, vase, little thimble thing. So yeah, what do we got? Yeah.
So I've got this necklace. I got this in Maui years ago. So there's a turtle on it. And I liked it because I think turtles are cool. And I like this hole that's in it too. And I got it at a flea market in Maui once. The first summer my wife and I were dating, her parents went on a trip to Maui because her dad has an aunt that lives there. So we went to Maui, and they took me with, actually. I remember my wife and I had only been dating like 2 months, and he said to me on New Year's Eve, he said, "Hey, if you give her little brother some guitar lessons, we'd like to take you to Hawaii with us." He was drunk. It was New Year's Eve.
Have a good time. Yeah.
But he and my mother-in-law, I guess, had talked about it, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll go. What the heck?" And I'm not a very good guitar teacher, but I did teach him some things, and now he's a music student at Millersville. So I guess something worked out. But he wound up teaching himself a lot of things. He's a better guitar player than I am. He's just amazing. So we went to Maui. I got this necklace there, and when I showed my great aunt in law who lives there, she goes, "Oh, you have a honu." I said, "What?" And she goes, "That's the Hawaiian word for turtle is honu." I said, "Oh, cool." She goes, "It represents home because a turtle carries its home on its back." And she's like, "As long as you wear this, that's like having a piece of home with you. And that's kind of, the symbol of the turtle in Hawaii." I said, "That's cool." So I try to wear this when I play, no matter where I'm playing, because it's like always having a piece of home with me. So that's kind of the symbol.
That's awesome.
That.
Yeah.
I don't wear it to every show, but a lot of shows early on, I always had this thing on, and I always got compliments on it. "Where'd you get this?" Some old Hawaiian woman in Maui,
Cool. What a story. But yeah.
Then the guitar here. This is actually my latest guitar that I got. This one, this is a Martin guitar.
Okay, so, I saw your hat, Martin, so I figured this is Martin guitar, yeah.
So anybody that knows me knows that I love Martin because they're not only American-made, but they're Pennsylvania-made. They're made right up in Nazareth. So I got linked up with these guys last year when I played at Music Fest. We played a set on a band stage, and then they had contacted us and said, "Do you want to play the acoustic stage? It's not a paying show, but it's a short set, and it's the Yingling and Martin stage, like acoustic stage." And I was like, "Oh,
yeah,
it's one of my favorite beers. It's my favorite guitar company." Yeah. Like, absolutely.
No brainer.
The more I can play at Music Fest, the better, because Bethlehem shuts down for those 10 or 11 days that they do that festival.
Yeah.
And everybody's out. So I was like, yeah. So I go there, I play that festival, and I had a Martin from before, but it was a Mexico-made Martin. It was a little bit cheaper, but it was what my parents could afford. They got it for me for when I graduated college because I was starting to take off with the music thing, and they're like, "You need an acoustic guitar. Yeah. You can't keep playing with your Les Paul. You got to have an acoustic for these solo shows." It was before I was in any bands. So they got me that guitar, and as I was playing it, a string broke. And one of the guys from Martin that was in the tent, he was like a sales rep or something, came up to me and he said, "Here, borrow one of these." And it was like this Nazareth made. It was like an Eric Clapton edition. And
wow.
Eric Clapton is, he was God in our household. My parents had seen him like a dozen times before I was born in their younger years. And he handed me this guitar. He said, "Here, I'm going to change your string quick." I'm thinking, geez, now this is like on-site service.
Yeah, this
is cool.
Yeah.
His name was Floyd. He's the artist relations coordinator for Martin.
Shout out to Floyd. That's awesome.
Floyd is a great guy. And then he talked to me and said, we want to work with you and get you that one of those Nazareth-made ones that you've been wanting. So this is the product of that. So in September last year, I went up to the factory. I took the factory tour. And then I played around with some stuff on their showroom floor, and this 00015 was what I came up with that I wanted. So they put a custom, they put a pickup in it for me, made it custom, and I've been playing shows with this since February, and I love this guitar. Her name's Juanita.
Oh my gosh, she got a name?
Yeah.
Juanita. All right, shout out to Juanita. This is awesome. Can I... Can I touch her?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. If you want, you can pick
it
up.
I'll hold her when we do pictures then.
You can smell it. She still smells like the factory floor and the sound.
I'll get a picture of her smelling, yeah.
I love the smell of cured wood. I love the smell, and it's still got the smell. It doesn't smell totally like a bar yet, but.
Right. It'll get there. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Live Edge and real wood, working, everything like that. So This is awesome. Okay, and there'll be pictures up on American Grown Podcast, Facebook and Instagram for all the listeners. Very cool. So now what's the glass vial thing?
Yeah, so this is a slide. So you can take this and get a really cool sound out of it. I'll just demo a little bit here.
Oh, but sweet. Wow.
So that's kind of what you get there. And that's like an Allman Brothers kind of thing. Now, they didn't start it. You know, that's an old blues kind of technique there, playing with a slide. But like I said, the Allman Brothers are like one of my favorites. And you can buy these anywhere. But this is supposed to mimic a Coracidin pill bottle from like mid-20th century. Because Coracidin pills would come in this. And, you know, guys like Dwayne Allman and Taj Mahal, you know, they would just take the Coracidin pill bottles and they'd dump them out and then they'd just slide that on their finger and that's what they'd play with.
Yeah.
Old blues guys used to play with a beer bottle, but this is what I prefer to play with. I like the sound of glass. I like the tone that you get from it. So, yeah. And we still get to play a little bit of slide. We do some Allman Brothers covers with Gypsy Convoy, but this is a Derek Trucks signature slide, which Derek Trucks now plays with Tedeschi Trucks Band, but he had a little stint with the Allman Brothers for about 15 years or so until they decided to call it quits in 2014. But Derek Trucks, Dwayne Allman, those are some real heroes of mine, and Dickie Betts too, who by the way just passed away today. I take a lot of my style and a lot of my hints and a lot of my notes from guys like that and apply it to country music. So that's kind of how we get that little Southern rock edge in our country.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Thank you for playing that a little bit there.
Oh, of course.
So now, how can our listeners connect with you and follow along on your journey?
So they can find us on Spotify. Just search up Cody Tyler and Gypsy Convoy, or for my solo stuff, they just search up Cody Tyler. Every little follow helps. So you can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Pandora, Amazon, anywhere you stream your music from. And then they can find us on our website at CodyTylerMusic.com. We've got a little merch store set up on there. We've got some t-shirts. We also have our album on vinyl. I'm a big vinyl guy.
Oh, nice.
I need to get some CDs in. We sold out of CDs last summer with the album. So we're going to get some CDs as we gear up to really hit the road this summer. We got a lot of shows in Maryland this year and some places in further out like Central PA. And it's looking like a good year. And then they can find us on Facebook at Cody Tyler Music, Instagram at Cody Tyler Music, TikTok, it's at Cody Tyler Gypsy Convoy, and on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, it's Cody Tyler GC.
Perfect. You got all the bases covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. All right, now, last couple questions here. On the form, you mentioned wanting to, you know, I'll say plug some good country music, some artists from PA. Yeah. You know, are there any that you want to shout out, or maybe do you have any recommendations for possible future guests on the podcast?
Absolutely. So of course I'm going to start with Jess Zimmerman Band. Jess is a good friend of ours. We've got a show coming up with her and our friends Cold Spring Union at Mickey's Black Box in Lititz.
Yeah.
It's on Friday, June 7th. So, I think this is going to air before then. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, go get your tickets. Friday, June 7th, Mickey's Black Box. So Jess is going to headline. We're the middle band, and Cold Spring Union are the opening band, which I don't even think is right, because my next shout out is Cold Spring Union. These guys are an incredible four-piece band out of Central PA. I guess you could say they're based in Harrisburg. They've got a fantastic drummer in Brandon Valentine, a very talented bass player in Morgan Stambaugh, and then the lead guys, John Rossi and Cody Wilt. They take turns playing lead guitar. Sometimes they play guitar minis together, and they take turns on lead vocal duties. And I think all four of them harmonize too. And they are just an incredible and very musically intelligent band. And they are probably one of my favorite live bands in Central Pennsylvania, in the whole state of Pennsylvania. I think you should have those guys on.
Yeah, I got to do some research. I got to check these guys out.
You could even
give them a listen.
You could even get either Cody or John separate. They're great.
Yeah.
Cody and John as a duo are great. Brandon Valentine, the drummer, is also the president and founder of the Central Pennsylvania Music Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
So he puts on the CPMAs every year, the Hall of Fame stuff. He knows a lot of people. he's good friends now with Brett Michaels from Poison, Brett Michaels being from the Central PA area. I think Brandon alone would be a great guest on the show. But yeah, those four boys in Cold Spring Union, they are fantastic musicians. I don't know how they are not known all over the country yet.
Yeah.
They're too country for rock and too rock for country. They're just awesome. So you can look them up. They've got stuff up to stream. Another good band right now is Sam Stinson, formerly known as Sam Schmidhuber. They just put out their debut single yesterday, I want to say. I'm going to agree with Jess and say Addie Grace is another good one. She's not really country, but she's like this child prodigy. She's like 15 or 16 years old, and she just had her debut single released on Sunday this past week.
Whoa, holy cow.
You have to check her out.
Okay.
She is incredible and just a great human being altogether. Addie's great. I'm going to agree with Jess and go with Olivia Farabaugh again. Olivia was country, and now she's pivoting toward Christian music, and she's living down in Nashville right now, you know, just knocking it out of the park, and she's one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. She comes up here back to the Central PA area every year, and she does the CIRS Festival, or the CIRS Fest. She herself has chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or CIRS, and she puts on a festival every year to help. It's a charity fund that helps people with this disease try to find some answers, because it's kind of a rare thing. But yeah, Olivia is really cool. You could talk to her about her charity work, as well as her transition from country to Christian music. But yeah, she's just an awesome, awesome person. Love Olivia. Yeah, Sam Stinson. Adam and the Armadillos are another good band.
Adam and the Armadillos?
Yeah, they're from up around Penn State. Like, they run State College. They're so popular up there. They play Champs every once in a while, which is like one of the best college bars in America. They play every week. I think it's like every Thursday night at The First, which is this cool like basement Celtic Irish bar on campus. And they play all around Central PA quite a bit. And they even get down to Westchester, down to one of my favorite venues called the Brickhead Lounge. Yeah, Adam and the Armadillos are great. You got the Colt Wilbur Band. He's from Central PA. Really talented guitar player. And then he's got a lead guitarist who's a little bit older that knows some of the guys in my band. His name is, I think it's Randy Rhodes or something. Not to be confused with the guitar player from Ozzy Osbourne. But yeah, Colt Wilbur Band are awesome. So shout out to them. Jake Maish, who is from down below York. Now, Jake has got an interesting story to him. He's in the service as well as being an artist. And then he works in sales too. So he's got a lot of different things going on with his life.
Yeah.
Jake is a really cool guy. You'll definitely want to check him out. His songs are fantastic. He's a solo artist, doesn't have a band, but he cranks out some really nice songs. He's a really good writer. That's all that's coming to mind right now, but I know I'm
Thank
leaving
you. No,
people
yeah,
out.
Yeah. That's such a wide variety, and it's knowledge, you know what I mean? I didn't know all these bands and solo artists existed here in Pennsylvania, Pennsyltucky, so definitely want to check all those guys out and see about, if they're interested in coming on the podcast and sharing their story, you know?
Yeah, this place is a treasure trove of great, undiscovered, original country music that, you do not, they are so overlooked. It's not even funny. It's just waiting to be tapped into. All it's going to take is one of us to hit, and then everybody's going to know. It's like Kentucky, like in the beginning of the whole Red Dirt scene, Texas and Oklahoma were like the untapped talent pool outside of Nashville.
Okay.
Then it was like Kentucky. You got guys like Tyler Childers and Chris Stapleton and stuff. Now, right now, it's Alabama. Everybody's looking at Taylor Honeycutt and Red Clay Strays and Rich Henderson, people like that coming from Alabama. I think Pennsylvania could be one of those next up to bat, where people are like, how have these people been hiding for
right.
so long?
Let's go in Pennsylvania right here. Let's go. What do you think real quick of, not a local guy, obviously, but oh my gosh, Anthony, is it Oliver? Richmond, north of Richmond?
No, Oliver Anthony.
Oliver Anthony. Thank you. I had it twisted.
So that song, it really grabbed me when I heard it. I've heard a lot of stupid theories about that song trying to discredit it. Somebody on Twitter the other week tried to tell me that it's a Confederate anthem because it references Richmond, which I understand where they're coming from. Richmond was the capital of the Confederate States. But It has nothing to do with that at all.
Here we go, history.
It's because Richmond and rich men, you've got to play on words. Mm-hmm. So as a songwriter, I can see where he's coming from. And, you know, it's talking about rich men north of Richmond. So he's, you know, talking about politicians, which there's not much on earth that I detest more than politicians.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what side of the aisle they're on. I don't 100%. Think they know our plight. I don't think they understand the working man. And that's really all that song is trying to get at. Now, people say that he's crapping on people on welfare. I personally don't see it that way. I'd be willing to have that debate with anybody anytime when he's talking about if you're 5'3" and you're 300 pounds, taxes ought not to pay for your bags of fudge rounds. People get hung up on that line. Mm-hmm. But he's not, to me, crapping on people that are on welfare. I see welfare as a necessity for people who need it. But like he said, if you're 5'3" and you're 300 pounds, like if you're overweight, you're not starving to death. And fudge rounds are not the most nutritious thing to definitely be purchasing not with tax dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't
yeah
want to get too political on, no. on here. Yeah. But, you know, I think that song was coming from a place of genuine struggle. Oliver Anthony at the time, before that song came out, he admitted, he said he had just recently found Christ. And that before he wrote that song, you know, he was in a really bad place with drugs and drinking. And I've listened to his new album that he's got out. I think it's amazing. I think it's an incredible album. I think Dave Cobb did a great job producing it. One thing that Dave Cobb does great is he gets out of the way and lets artists be themselves. And he adds a little bit of producer's touch here and there. I would love to make an album with Dave Cobb one day. But yeah, that song grabbed people.
Yes.
And I see the crowds that he's pulling in Europe, and it's grabbing people in Europe. I mean, he was in Ireland, in Scotland, in the UK, and people were, I mean, he's selling places out over there. When you see somebody that's able to do that, I mean, that song comes from a genuine place in his heart, and I can't, anybody that writes a song like that, that it comes from a genuine place in their heart and their lived experience, mm-hmm, you can't talk shit on that.
Yeah, you can't
beat it. And the people that are talking shit on that, I think it's just their jealousy coming through.
Yeah, that's it. So it's, I think it's, you know, like this podcast, like with your music, Jess and everybody, it's authenticity, right? Yeah. It's authentic. It's you. It's your story. It's, like you said, he tapped into, I would say, what a lot of people are thinking and feeling, and it just, it's real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it comes back to the, I think the times that we're living in right now are, and I don't want to equate it to that, but during the Great Depression, you had a lot of music from people that were singing songs about struggle and strife. You know, you had Woody Guthrie and folk artists like that that were just writing about, you know, songs against fascism, you know, as that was rising up in the 30s too, and writing songs about, you know, joining the union and the working man. This is that niche coming back again because some people are really struggling to pay their bills right now. Inflation's a killer. No matter who you blame for it, it doesn't matter if you blame the president or if you blame corporations for it. Or fiscal policy of the United States. It doesn't matter. The fact is, people are struggling right now. The economy is sort of has this false sense of being strong, but it's not actually that strong. The working man is hurting right now, and this is one of those songs. And it, him playing that dobro like he's playing,
yeah.
like that style, it's got that 1930s, you know, post-depression sort of feel to it, and there's a desperation to the song. You hear his vocals and you hear his voice, you hear it in him. He's in it, like he yeah. feels oh, yeah. it.
Yes.
And yeah. I come back to it and I listen to it just to get the raw power and emotion in his voice. Is it the best sung song? No. Is it the best written song? No. But the reason it connects with people is because he's got the heart behind it, and people can smell bullshit. If you're singing a song that was written by somebody else that you don't feel, and you're just, you know, in the studio looking at your phone and to remember the words, and you're not actually feeling it, people are going to sniff that out from a mile away. And maybe that song will see some success. But to me, that's why I like to write just about all of my songs. Or if I pick a cover, it's something that I feel or that I've lived. And I give credit to that other songwriter for doing it. But that's why the songs that I play, I try to make sure that I had a hand in writing them somehow, because I feel like, especially in country music, if it's not authentic, it's not worth doing.
Yep, 100%. So, 100%. Before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
That Mickey's Black Box show that we got going on. We also are, we want to get into the studio this summer with the band, make the band record. It's going to be kind of like a truck driving album. It's going to be an ode to truck drivers. They were out there working their tails off, especially during COVID and keeping things open. And we really found out during that time. It's not going to be a COVID album at all. We're well past that point. I don't even want to hear that word again, really.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's an ode to truck drivers, and ultimately it's going to be dedicated to my dad, who gave up, you know, 20 years of his life to make sure that my brother and I could have a better life than he did growing up. And I have that acoustic album that I'm working on right now, too, at Tuscarora Records up in Landisburg. So another Central PA made record. And we'll see you out on the road sometime this summer. Just keep up on our website and keep up on Facebook and Instagram. That's kind of where I'm the most active. Need to get more active on TikTok, but just keep up with us and see where we're going to be. Come on out to a show, and we hope to see you out there somewhere.
There you go. Support your local musicians. Cody Tyler, singer and songwriter for the band Cody Tyler and Gypsy Convoy on the American Grown Podcast in the Color Tech Creative Solutions Studios. Thank you for joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop, veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit Triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.